let's say it's a driving trip in Alaska in the wintertime on the road system. Do you have what you need to stay warm and fed in the event your vehicle breaks down? Good morning and welcome to Talk of Alaska. I'm Steve Heimel. The subject today, winter survival. Have you gone through the ice and survived? Tell us about it at 1-800-478-8255, 478-TALK. In Anchorage, a local call at 550-8422, email talk at aprn.org. We have asked it before and we're asking it again. Are you prepared on Talk of Alaska statewide?
Today's program is underwritten in part by NMS, building a culture of safety through active caring. More information online at nmsusa.com. And by Alaska Business Monthly Magazine, providing insight on statewide business and government issues. There's more information online at akbizmag.com.
Oh, we have assembled a absolutely stellar panel with, I can't think of three people who would be better qualified to talk about what we're talking about. I think we'll start by going out to Western Alaska, the YK Delta, where Peter Atchek runs Bethel Search and Rescue. Peter, welcome to Talk of Alaska.
Good morning to you all.
Peter, why don't we start by asking about the river? I remember the last time I heard you on the radio, and you're on the radio quite a bit. You were saying that flying the river, there were places on the Cusco where it was unsafe because there were holes and so forth. Have they frozen up now?
Most of them have frozen up, actually, but we still have a few open waters and thin ice, you know, in various parts of the Kuskokwim River, especially further, as you go further up from Bethel, then you would tend to see more danger areas up that way because of the current is faster and you know, there's trees to block some of the wind from reaching to the river to make it cooler, so to freeze up. So it's more dangerous upriver as it is down here.
And people are pretty well, then, I would assume, start using the river, traveling on the river with snow machines.
They need that river to travel to and fro between their villages and to subsist, you know, to their areas that they go to. They need that river, and yes, they use it at the first opportunity that is safe enough to go on. And unfortunately, you know, some people are not very careful about traveling on the river. You know, nowadays we have fast snow machines and people want to get to their destinations rapidly, and, you know, they don't take all the precautions that they should.
You know, what I wanted to talk about was what you ought to have in that snow machine when you climb on it. So we got a couple of guests with us who have assembled all sorts of lists and so forth, but basically just a ballpark figure, Peter, when somebody takes off on the Kuskokwim River, how likely do you think it is that they have in their snow machine everything that they might need if they run into a problem?
Very few people do that nowadays. You know, the elders, of course, you know, carry everything they need, you know, from... You know, elders are a lot more careful than the young people, you know. And and a lot of the younger folk people nowadays, they don't take the time or, you know, they just don't get prepared as they used to. You know, they take for granted, you know, that their machine will get them there and their GPS will not fail or, you know, there's a lot of modern conveniences nowadays that you can take with you, you know, your cell phone. And some people now have spots, you know, that they carry with them, you know, and then they tend to lax on their safety equipment that they should take along when they have these other pieces of equipment.
Now, how would, you know, if I were going to take a snow machine trip on the river, and I had my, let's say I had figured out the survival gear that I needed, how would I make sure that it was in a position that it would float? If my snow machine went through the ice, what's the best way to handle that?
If you were to fall through the ice? You know, I did fall through before, and one thing I was glad I had was in my pocket I had a piece of I think it was a screwdriver I had, you know, I'd use that to kind of help me get out of the ice, you know. So the main thing is that you need to get off the ice or off the water to the top of the ice as soon as you can. And people do panic. You know, I was in a panic mode myself. You know, it's a very scary situation when you fall through and you're in extremely cold water that just attacks your body and, you know, makes it numb, and then everything is in slow motion. And and now I carry a couple of spark plugs on each side of my pockets on my my winter coat. Those spark plugs, what they normally have is that what you can screw off on the top there, and there's a little probe sticking out of the spark plug on the top there that you could use to jab into the ice with it, you know, to pull yourself out. The ice can get very slippery, you know, once it gets wet, you know, even if there's snow on it, and then once you're surrounding around the ice when you're on the edge, it can get very slippery and almost impossible even for an athletic type person to, you know, to get out. But if you had that simple tool, that can pull you out.
You know, the minute you said I carry a pair of spark plugs, one on each side of my parka, the man sitting across from me put both arms up and he made this spiking motion. He knew exactly what you were talking about right away. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, Dean Cummings.
Thanks. Yeah, that's a pretty practical a way of thinking. That's a great tool.
So Dean is with H2O Guides, and you're a helicopter skiing outfit. Tell me about this. How did you get to be H2O Guides and do helicopter skiing?
I came up in 91 to compete in the World Extremes, and I'd been all over the world. I was on the U.S. ski team, and I was a ski mountaineer, and I came up here, and I just realized this is the pinnacle of the sport, and just, you know, I just truly love the wilderness, and that's what made me come up here. You know, the land to me is like my life and the religion. So when I saw this much open space, I grew up in New Mexico. This was the place, and we do fishing and heli skiing, and we do a lot of education, and you know, we're just so lucky that, you know, 10 minutes from your home, you're in true wilderness, and you're truly in the elements, and your senses are higher than they are in most places in the world because the hazards are here.
Wow, you could be a guest. And we were talking about economic development because it's one of our one of our areas where we talk about a wilderness guiding and all that sort of thing. And you're really on that wave.
Uh-huh.
And it's pretty clearly that you're doing it because you want to stay up here and you got to earn a living. And you're fortunate to be able to have found a way to earn a living doing what you love in a place that you love.
Yeah. Alaska's amazing. We need to respect it and not get so caught up in all the new technology and get out there too far beyond ourselves.
So you along with Deborah McGon were part of founding this outfit called the North American Outdoor Institute. Deborah McGon, Executive Director of North American Outdoor Institute, welcome to Talk of Alaska.
All right, thank you. It's great to be here, and I appreciate the opportunity to get on the radio and talk to people. And
I think you know, it's a statewide show, so we're going all over the state. We're in Southeast, where people have this way of not wearing their not wearing their float coats when they go out on a skiff, because they're just going to going right down there.
Right,
and skiff.
We even do that in the city, where people tend to jump in their car because they're just going to the store. But Peter really made some great points here that, you know, the young people are getting caught up in technology and not taking the time to do some of this preparation, and that is something that we really strongly encourage.
Yeah. So a lot of the thrust is of the organization is education.
That's correct. That is our whole focus, is we want to help people get educated about how they can recreate safer in Alaska, and how, you know, like Peter made the point that, you know, we use our snow machines as transportation here. It's our livelihood, and it's really important for people to slow down. We like to say go slow to go fast. You know, you got to slow down and take those time up front to get prepared so that if something does happen, you've got the tools with you. And Peter's point of the spark plugs was fabulous. I've heard nails with a string, you know, like your mom used to put your mittens on. And I've, you know, there's anything you can use to get back on that ice is a good idea.
Well, your outfit has put together this little list here. I think I'm just going to read it. Suggested items for carrying on a snowmobile adventure. A shovel, a transceiver probe. What is that, transceiver probe?
A transceiver is a locator, and this is more for the steeper mountains where it's an avalanche beacon that you can find your friend if he gets buried.
Okay, yeah, the avalanche beacon. Snow saw.
And the probe is how you locate them out physically after you've got it.
And you got to have that, too.
Yeah, you got to have all three or you're not going to save your friend.
Yeah, and generally speaking, I think a shovel is pretty well at the top of the list for I mean, even in a vehicle in the wintertime.
Yeah, absolutely. You should have that. And you know, here's a really good point is that if you have your shovel, your probe, and your beacon, wear them on you. Don't put them on your snow machine, because if you get separated from your snow machine, they won't do you any good.
Yeah. Okay, I'm going to go. Peter Radchek, I want to get a suggestion from you. When I've gone through this list of anything you would add, besides the spark plugs, are you ready?
Yes.
All right. They're talking about the probe, basically the avalanche gear, where you need a probe and you need a locator beacon and you need a shovel. Then they've got snow saw, a sleeping bag or bivy bag of some sort, snow shoes, a come along and tow rope, extra clothing, always a good idea, and then it goes into specifics on that, a headlamp and some extra batteries, your cell phone or satellite phone, and of course in areas along the river that's not going to work, map and compass, a package of Jell-O, your basic survival kit, your first aid kit, an ice pick or an ice axe of some sort, ice screws, duct tape, a helmet, good quality and condition. You're supposed to wear that when you're on the snow machine. spare parts and tools, hand warmers, and a thermos that's already got hot water in it. What a great idea. Peter, what occurs to you to add to that list?
That's a very impressive list there. That of course, a tarp is always a must, you know, when we travel out there, especially where... it's all bare tundra in a lot of our areas out here. There's nothing to break the wind. And that shovel, I'm glad that shovel was included in there. That's a very important tool. And that ice pick is a must when you get out there on the tundra. And just off, I'm working off my memory, you know, of what I heard. And then there was oh, I don't know if I'm having this problem on my end. You know, we did get cut off for a little bit time there, and I wasn't able to get the total list, you know. But to me, that kind of sounded like a very impressive list, you know. In fact, before you go on a travel, depending on where you're going and how length of time you're going, that list might vary, you know. And it's always a good idea for a person, you and your partner, to sit down and then figure out, you know, well, we're going into the mountains, you know, and it will require maybe some different kind of tools or equipment that might help you survive out there. And like in another time, you're going out to the coastal area. And in the coast, you know, they have a little bit of different tools to help them survive in case they fall through. One important tool that I see, which, you know, the coastal people utilize is like it's about a 5 or 6 foot pole with an ice pick end on one end, and in long ago they used to make them out of ivory. Nowadays you can use a spike, kind of at an angle. So when you do fall through the ice, you can use that. That angled piece up on the top there to jab into the ice to pull you out. In along the coast, in our Yupik language, they call that tool, survival tool, lukchik, which they can. It's also like a good walking stick. It's got a jabber, a nice big jabber at the end, you know, to kind of check the ice in front of you as you're walking along. So, but that list that whoever put that together, that sounded really good, you know. So I don't have anything to add to that one.
Well, thank you. Thank so you, but yeah.
You know, fire starter, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's part of that survival kit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what I was thinking.
Like, what is it, duct tape or something?
Well, we've got duct tape on the list for sure, but the survival kit, we would recommend a flint and steel. And we tell people, take a cotton ball, put a little Vaseline on it, and that's a great fire starter. And so you use the flint and steel, and you can just peel up the cotton ball with the Vaseline on it, and it'll just ignite really quick.
So you get, it's flint and steel, you're sure of getting a spark.
That's right. Your match is
a good tinder that.
Yeah,
and no matter how waterproof your matches advertised to be, and how many plastic bags you put around them.
The big lighter, yep.
If you're dry, just pull out the lighter, but if all else fails, you got to have something that really is reliable.
Yeah. We're speaking with Deborah McGann and Dean Cummings of the North American Outdoor Institute and Peter Atchuk of Bethel Search and Rescue, and a fascinating discussion of winter survival. And we want to invite you, the listeners of the Alaska Public Radio Network, with your thoughts on this subject, your suggestions on what are the best survival techniques, and especially anyone that has some personal experience. Peter has already told us about how he went through the ice, and he was lucky to have something that he could jam in there to pull himself back out. And now he always carries a pair of sparks plugs. You probably got some tales of things you've gone through, and we'd like to hear them at 1-800-478-8255, 478-TALK, the subject winter survival. If you're calling from Anchorage, dial 550-8422. That's a local call. Email us talk@aprn.org. And we're open for business. Robert joins the program from way up in Shishmaref. Robert, welcome to Talk of Alaska.
Hey, good morning. Good
morning.
Yeah, just wanted to stress out that we utilize the buddy system and public awareness.
All right.
Because you gotta tell the individuals where you're going, exactly where you're gonna go. Because if you're hunting caribou or whatever out there, you break down. You gotta have your tools along with them, like a sleeping bag, spare clothes, and communications. And, you know, these are the basic type of tools that we utilize here in Shishmaref, because we got these, what we call four seasons, spring, summer, fall, and winter. And we try to stress with the community here in Shishmaref that it's safer for you to be utilizing these tools than the buddy system that you're traveling with.
Robert, would a person going out usually take a VHF radio with them?
Yeah, we stress that up here. There's a community of Shishmaref. Just about everybody here in the community of Shishmaref utilize the VHF. And one other tool that we utilize is if we do break down out there, we try to access the communications with the airline. The airline communicates with the community when they're coming in from via Nome or Kotzebue. And if we do break down out there, we use the channel that they're on.
Wow!
just to pinpoint exactly where we're at with a GPS.
That's something I would have never thought of.
That's a great idea. I like it.
Yeah, they do that in the Grand Canyon because it's such a tight canyon, and when you see a plane, you hit it. If you had a rescue.
Wow,
that's
Robert.
Great.
Anything more from Shishmaref there?
Well, you know, we always try to stress that, you know, utilize the buddy system up here. And, you know, you got to let your loved ones know exactly where you're going, exactly how long you're going to be gone, because an animal will stress take you off your waypoint. Because if you break down, you have no communications we're looking for a hay in a, or needle in a haystack, in other words. And we got to kind of span out when we're on a search mode. Up here, we don't go home at supper time. We're out there 24/7 till we find that individual. That's a, just the way we operate our search and rescue here in Chishma.
Yeah, that's you know, I hear that over and over again in the bush. You know, it's very important that people are just going to do everything they can if someone is lost. Even if they know that they probably have not survived, they're going to keep going until they find them.
Right. Along with that, we try to utilize a package system that, you know, they got to have a sled, they got to have spare clothes, whatever necessary it is going to, like if you're going to go camping for a day or two, those items you have to take with you. You got to plan ahead. You can't just get up and go as a day go by. You got to plan ahead because, you know, anything will happen out there. It just the way it is.
Robert, thanks for your call from Chishmaref, and I'm really glad that you mentioned the sled because, you know, that's important. If you get a breakdown, you've got this gear that you've got to carry around, or if you're going to sit. But if you want to move anywhere, you can, a sled is real important for carrying much gear.
Yeah, Robert, are the younger folks, are they using the buddy system and working with the same protocols you and your friends are?
You wandering off away from your equipment.
Sorry, I missed that.
It's easier for us to find an individual that is with the equipment versus you walking away from your equipment. Mm-hmm. You got to stay with your gear out there. Don't walk away from anything that's going to help us find the equipment versus you trying to find you walking away from your gear.
All right. Thank you, Robert, from Chishmaref. I didn't get the answer to your question. I'm sorry.
No, I think there was a little glitch in the radio waves there.
Yeah. Yeah, Peter Atchek, I wanted to ask you for any of your observations you might have at this point.
Hey, that Robert has some really good ideas on survival techniques there, and you know, those are very important. You know, a lot of them we utilize over here, the airline channels, you know, that thing. Here's one thing that when we talking to young people about survival out there, because a lot of them were looking for, you know, snow machinery between villages, you know, and those are critical times, you know, that we need to find them before too late. So one of the things that a lot of people don't think about is that, you know, well, you're alone out there and you run out of gas in your snow machine between villages or you don't know where you are. And then we always find that snow machine before, many times, more times, more percentage of the time we find that snow machine before we find a person. And so, you know, Robert was saying that you stay with your equipment that might help you survive for a while longer. So that is important. And one thing that that we used out here before that we tell the young people about is that you're in a bind with your snow machine, you run out of gas, and then you're trying to, you know that there's people that will be looking for you after a certain amount of time, especially if you told your folks, people, that you're going to be gone for so long. Now, what to do? So what you would do, you normally have people have a knife, you know, in their pockets, or if you don't, then that's one very important tool to have, a knife, is you cut off your snow machine seat, which is made out of foam, and even though your snow machine ran out of gas, you can tip that over, and there'll be some gas on the on the bottom of that snow machine tank, gas tank. What you do is you dip part of that foam into the gas, and then you put it in front of the foam. And if you had a shovel, which you should, you know, you kind of dig a hole if it's windy and into the snow, and then you put that foam in there and start the fire. Once it gets going, I tell you, that foam will give out the blackest smoke you ever seen in your life. And he'll carry for hours. I mean, if especially if it's in the snow, out of the wind, they'll burn like for a day or so. You know, and then you can smell that for years. It's the fiercest smell you ever smelled in your life. So you smell that out there. You know, we've been telling our young people that's one way you can probably get located is, you know, with that one survival idea that we pass around to our people out here.
That's great. And, you know, I think that was a great point that you made there, Peter Atchek. You know, you said, I don't know how many times we've gone out looking for somebody and we find the snow machine before we find a person.
That's right. And sometimes we don't find the person. That's the real tragedy.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there comes a point where a person becomes hypothermic and they get a little crazy.
Yep. They get very crazy.
And you don't, as I understand it, the hypothermia is something you don't recognize. Somebody else has to recognize it in you.
Yeah, people don't realize that once it starts, it's hard to reverse. And if you start getting cold, you got to fix it right then and there. You can't ignore it.
Wow.
It's one of those things. One thing that keeps coming back through all this discussion is, especially with your stuff, Peter, and from Robert, it's all practical things. It's really the real practical things that are easy to do and that make the most sense, and not so much about getting caught up in too much of the advancements, because that's kind of what's going on. We're really ahead of ourselves with technique has really gone to a high level. The equipment's now, you know, a snowmobile's like a superbike anymore, like 0 to 100 in no time. And like,
but yeah, the dealers don't tell you that business about burning the seat.
No, they don't.
No.
They don't. Now that's truly Alaskan.
Those are spark plugs.
What we see a lot is people, they're getting more confidence because they think they have a spot and they have a transceiver or they have their GPS. And, you know, it's really about the practical things and the things you can use. And just because you have that stuff, it shouldn't give you confidence. It should make you just feel a little bit better about what you're doing, but it shouldn't make you go flying up the river any faster or up that mountain.
Well, I'm sure you see this all the time. And just like what Peter said, and you were inquiring about with Robert, which is that, you know, the elders, they're going to take what they need.
That's yeah. Right.
A little slower pace.
The young ones, they get that problem. A little slower pace.
Yeah.
Well put.
Yeah, we like to tell people the most important tool that you need to put in your toolbox is your brain, and engage that tool, because that the decision making of what we do out there is really going to be the difference between life and death. So
you get an emergency, the first thing you're going to do is not necessarily panic, but get in this sort of revved up, hyped up state of, what do I do? Should I do this? Should I do that? Having to do something.
Right, right. Yep.
Yeah.
Slow down and just take a deep breath and, just really think it through for sure.
Well, because you could do some really stupid things when you're
in a hurry.
That's been my experience.
Right. Yep.
Yeah, you can get out there really, really far now, really quickly with the equipment.
Yeah.
So some education and some knowledge and taking advantage of all those resources to have better protocols is key.
Well, I remember being in a cold place and getting a stove out and going to pump it, and it wouldn't pump. And then I went through that thing.
Right.
Like, okay, how do I take apart? What do I do? What not? Well, I had the instructions right there with me. You know, and it's extremely routine to take these things apart and wet that little gasket in there, and then your pump's going to work.
Right.
You know? It's going to dry out, you know, in no time at all, really. So you just one of the things you need to do, you should have done before you left.
Yeah.
And there's a million things like that.
That's right. And one of the things that, you know, in the statistics that I've looked at, one of the major things that does get people in trouble is panic. So it is, you know, if you're prepared and you have the tools you need and you slow down and think about it, it's going to keep you from panicking. And that's going to be a really important tool.
Winter survival is the subject. It's Talk of Alaska. Our phone number, 1-800-478-8255. Email is talk@aprn.org. It's a local phone call if you're in Anchorage at 550-8422 as Talk of Alaska continues.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from Penn Air, providing scheduled service to 36 communities throughout Southwest Alaska. Reservations online at pennair.com. The Federal Aviation Administration sets rules for the operation of aircraft in airports and provides services to the flying public. Passengers are influential in making flying safer in Alaska, and when passengers know their rights and responsibilities, aviation is safer for everyone. There's more information online at faa.gov/go/flyalaska or toll-free at 1-866-357-4704. This message is sponsored by the FAA.
Well, it is Talk of Alaska. We've got Peter Atchek by telephone from Bethel Search and Rescue. We've got Deborah McGon, who is the executive director of the North American Outdoor Institute, and Dean Cummings of H2O Guides. And we have a pile of phone calls. Here's Jake from Fairbanks. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, Jake.
Hey, season's greetings to everyone.
Absolutely. Next week on Talk of Alaska is our season's greetings show, not to be missed. If you've ever heard it, it's pretty amazing. Hey.
I haven't heard it, but I'll stay tuned, and I'd like to keep some people alive by my little suggestion.
All right.
Hey, the military doesn't even discuss this one, but you guys need to carry some garbage sacks with you, as well as the throwaway plastic bags from the grocery store.
I've been amazed myself at how much more handy a plastic bag is once you get out in any kind of woods.
That's a great little bivy, isn't it?
Burning. These things, you can put them on your feet right next to the skin and pull your socks over that, and you have bunny boots. I don't really care what you're wearing. Tennis shoes will do it. But amazingly, you can survive some really cold temperatures with the simple application of some plastic on your feet. Use the garbage bag, cut some holes in it for your arms, and put it against your skin. If you don't cut holes in them, they're personal flotation devices. They keep your sleeping bag dry while you're in transit. The list goes on and on, but plastic is your friend, and I'd like for you to bear that in mind next time you step out. Throw some in the car. You know, they're always blowing around on the road, but you never know when you need one.
You know, I can just picture a whole lot of listeners with direct personal experience of what you're talking about, Jake. They're listening right now and say, I'm glad he brought that up.
That's right. Yeah, that's a great tool.
Well, yep. Yeah. Thanks for that, Jake. What is it that? What's the principle that is applying there with the plastic next to the skin to keep your feet warm?
Young boy, that plastic doesn't allow the moisture to escape. It's really uncomfortable because your feet are always wet.
Yeah,
you'll notice that in your bunny boots anyway.
Oh yeah.
But back when bread sacks, you had to ask mom for permission to have a couple. I'd put them on my feet and go out and work, and everyone else would be frozen stiff, but I'd get back to the house just with a big grin.
Well, our panel is not going to endorse the tennis shoes.
Well, it's a good idea to try it, though, ahead of time, so you know exactly what you have to do and when to do it. You know, just from practical experience, everyone should have a survival course.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Jake, I want to thank you very much.
Take care, and Merry Christmas.
Happy holidays.
Right. Well, Dean Cummings, we didn't mention that you're actually a champion extreme skier, right? You were the champion, what, 96?
Yeah, 95.
Wow. So, you and you've got a video out that has to do with taking responsibility, especially for people that are in that winter recreation community.
Yeah, and a lot of it hinges from the advancements in technology, and the techniques are now really high. And it's a film that we host in conjunction with our Be Snow Smart program that we developed for NAOI. It just brings it to light. It shows all the extreme sports and all these remote wilderness type people out there getting after it. And we're out there further than we ever were before, at a faster pace anyway. And it really describes the importance of, hey, it's our time to take advantage of the protocols that are out there that are really basic. Like snow machiners, they're not using backcountry protocols like a mountaineer would or a skier would, but that's where it's going because they're out there deep in the woods now. And it's just about all those things, you know, taking advantage of the protocols and techniques and using the buddy system and having backcountry protocols. And it goes as far as, you know, talking about protecting the environment. And it's our time. It's our time to not just take advantage of the techniques and protocols and all the wild adventures that you can have because you get desensitized by what you see on television and Discovery and things, and people are going for it. But they're forgetting a couple of things. They need to get more knowledge than ever before now because we are going at that higher level.
Well, yeah. I mean, we saw that in Alaska so drastically just when they started putting deeper, longer paddles on the snow machines and everybody's high marking and triggering avalanches and dying. We had an epidemic of that 1 year.
Yeah. Oh,
and I guess every improvement in gear. I mean, back in the traditional days, you know, things took a long time to change. But now they have all these high-tech materials and everything that, I can see where you go out farther than ever.
That's right.
Like Peter said, just the younger guys are just flying up the river, going from village to village and taking advantage of that fast sled. But what do they have for equipment if it breaks down? Do they even have snowshoes?
Yeah. It's Talk of Alaska. We're talking winter survival, and Bob joins the program from Petersburg. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, Bob.
Thank you.
How you doing?
I'm doing fine down here. What I like to emphasize is educating our children. Years ago, when my son was 6 years old, I was running a camp in North Carolina, and he and his seven-year-old cousin took off to look for salamanders and got lost. And, you know, thank God a wonderful search and rescue unit found them just in time. But it was some pretty anxious moments as a parent when your child's out there in the woods and you can't find them. So it's real important for all of us to take our kids out in the woods, whether it's kayaking or fishing or hiking or hunting or snowmobiling, whatever, to talk to them about what to do if you get separated. Or what to do, say, you know, they're out with their father and the father has a medical issue. But it's real important. And the main thing to teach children is when you're out there and you're lost, stay put. Because my son and his cousin, they kept wandering all over the place trying to find their way back, and it took longer for search and rescue to find them. But to educate your children on what to do if they get lost, and there's an excellent program out there right now called Hug a Tree. Of course, I realize in Alaska, there are a lot of places with no trees. But the idea is for a child to stay in one place, and it makes it much easier for a search and rescue team to be able to find them. So educating our children, I mean, this is a wonderful program. I'm, you know, loving all the stuff we're saying, but I figure not too many kids are listening to this program. It's mostly adults. So teaching our children is vitally important for their survival.
Thanks, Bob. I want to take that up with Peter Atchuk. To what degree do you think out in the YK Delta now are young people learning the things they need to learn? I mean, I wouldn't think that the schools are doing too much of it, and I'm just wondering if it's really being carried on through families so much anymore.
Yeah, so I appreciate that call from a Petersburg person. Those are some very important words that he just spoke. Not enough people, young people, are learning about survival techniques and skills that, you know, you should have to survive out there. And then I think that some of the schools do offer some survival ideas or courses.
Oh,
not,
good.
Not courses, but... But they do bring in the elders to talk about survival every now and then in some of the villages that I was aware of here, and there should be more of that. You know, if I can I tell you a kind of a humorous story in relation to what we're talking about here?
Absolutely.
I was in one class one time, or one school class, you know, where we were teaching our survival skills.
to some young people in the Chivik High School, and then one of the energetic young guys asked us. I was with a couple of elders there, and then he asked them, "Well, before the snow machines, you know, were there search and rescue groups?" "No," said there were no search and rescue groups before the snow machines came, because people on dock teams, you know, knew exactly what to do. You know, they knew what to bring along. Those were like, if you're going to go out and check your traps, even though it's not very far, you just put them in. That's what you do. You bring along a nice pick and a shovel and tarp. And so he tells a story about this one time this person went out to go check his fish traps, you know, with his dock team. And then and you know how the weather can change within a very short amount of time out here. Well, the weather changed at that time while he was out there, and it was 0-0. And his docks, well, when he got done, he turned around his docks and were headed somewhat towards the village. And it got so bad that he couldn't see his wheel docks anymore. And then eventually it was really severe, bad, blowing snow, and just the winds were howling, and it was just really, really bad weather out there. And then finally, after some time, his dock stopped, and the man thinks, "Oh no, my docks gave up." So what he did was he dug a hole in the snow, and then he went inside his cave, and, you know, of course, he had picked up a piece of a willow stick, you know, to put in his cave to probe into the top, you know, so, you know, the air can come out, you know, so you wouldn't suffocate inside that cave. And he had brought that with him, and then he survived that night. Come the next morning, it was just a beautiful day. The sun was just starting to come out, and slowly coming out of the horizon there, blue skies, just everything just so great out there. Good weather. And at that time, the wife steps out of their house and knocks on the man's cave to ask him to come. He was only feet away from his house. The docks had stopped where they normally stop, you know.
They were home.
Funny. So, yeah, that's... you know, very basic tools, you know, can make you survive out there. And I think maybe even though it's just, I wish that the school would take that a little more seriously. You know, people have, in some villages, you know, people do kind of take that somewhat seriously. But I wish more of the schools would catch on and teach our young people what to do out there, what survival techniques and skills.
Peter Hatchek, thank you so much, Bethel Search and Rescue. We've got this note from Adam in Homer, who says, "I understand that people living in modern communities don't have a chance to experience the outdoors on a regular basis. Many don't have any idea of the hazards, but I work with the Boy Scouts, and we go winter camping every month. We might not engage in extreme activities, but we do work to teach survival and outdoor etiquette. A scout in our troop could spend 40 to 60 nights sleeping outdoors in the cold by the time they are 15 or 16. In that time, they're bound to learn something about outdoor survival in spite of themselves." Yeah, I'm a big scout advocate. You know, that's where I got my basics. I don't think it has to be the scouts. But it is funny how you really do need the basics. You know what I mean, mm-hmm. Dean?
Yeah, and I was lucky there too. As Boy Scouts, we did winter trips and climbed 14ers in Colorado, and so I got a good basis there. One thing I wanted to back up to was, you know, it is important that when people get lost, the gentleman brought up, hug a tree. But, you know, yeah, you'll find that person, but they need to know that they need to keep moving to stay warm, and they need to also create a shelter. So don't just stay put. Stay put, build a shelter, keep moving.
Well, let's go into this. One thing I noticed is the difference that the first thing that Peter added to the list that you have for your snowmobile was the tarp. And, of course, windy out there mm-hmm. in the tundra and the delta. But now you've both come up with the same thing, which is the snow caves. Maybe we need to talk about that a little bit. Because I didn't really understand until I looked at your handout here, that what happens when you put yourself under the snow is that the inner part is going to melt and freeze.
Yeah, it can drip on you.
And so that's going to form more insulation. You actually want that to happen.
It helps. You know, the most important thing is the people, like, let's say, hug a tree. Well, don't just hug a tree and we'll find you frozen to it. there's a lot of different ways. Like my son the other day, he pulled up something on YouTube and it was how to build a snow cave. And he goes to dinner and tells mom, "Mom, I know how to build a snow cave. You know, a saw will help you build a cave really quickly instead of trying to shovel and get all sweaty." But a lot of people, what they don't realize is, you know, like Peter brought up, yeah, you got to have a vent hole in the top and you've got to not exert all your energy to build it. So it's important you build it into a steep hill if you can. And if you're in the flats in the tundra and you can cut some blocks, it may just be a wall that you build that you build to get out of the wind and out of the elements a little bit. But whatever you do, you need to do something that doesn't exert all your energy, get you all sweaty. But you got to keep moving, keep the energy flowing, the blood flowing, and you got to have something to protect you from the elements. Just stay put and sit still.
It's Talk of Alaska. We're talking winter survival. Let's go back down to the river, and Herman joins the program from Aniak. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, Herman.
Yeah, good morning. Is Peter still on?
He sure is.
Yeah, Peter,
yeah, hey, Duncan.
Yeah, I was going to tell you about your survival list. You know, I spent 2 nights out in the tundra. One thing you got to have is a can, some kind of can or some way to melt water. You got to have a flashlight. I was out there, I broke down in the lake, so I tipped my sled over, and it was windy, and I put tarp on a little gas stove, and I made some tea there, and I warmed up. It was going to get dark, so I went by the edge of the lake, and I made with my feet, I made an inch in the snow, made shelter with the tarp, and I found a place where there were a lot of dry sticks along the lake, and I spent the day gathering dry sticks, and what I did was, there's planes flying around, I made a signal fire ready in a bush. I put some dry grass and some green boughs on top, you know, and I had that ready in case the plane fly over, and I stamped out big SOS in the snow. And I spent a couple nights out there, and then finally a plane flew over, and I heard and light my signal fire, and there was smoke in that place. Sure enough, the plane started circling. I jump up and down, and then the plane left, and a little while later, getting dark, a trooper plane fly over. It was too dark for them to land, so they dropped a parachute with a radio, and they told me to pick them up in the morning, and they dropped me some sea rations, and that's how I got rescued. One thing, Peter, it's really dangerous here, the Kuskokwim. It goes high, you know, and it's hollow, so it's dangerous traveling. But it's nice to have a little ice pick. You can make one out of a crankshaft, like 2 foot handle, and you check the ice when you're going to go. But when you're going to cross dangerous lake or something, good to have a long pole. It's not in the middle of it. If you fall in, it'll hold you up. But those two things you should have, some kind of, they have these saws, they're like string, you know, you can saw things up with them. But you should make sure they have some way to melt water, because you get really thirsty out there. Even a pop can, you melt water, you want nice, something hot to drink, and a flashlight. The troopers are saying they see a flashlight long ways, you signal it 3 times, SOS, you know, and they said they saw it long ways. So anyhow, that's how I got rescued, and that's my story.
Herman, thank you so much for your tale there. We're all just one thing that you showed there was that you never panicked. You spent all day gathering firewood.
That's right. You kept moving. Yeah. That was really smart. Yep.
Yeah. So, Herman, thanks again for your call from Aniak and the Voice of Experience. As Talk of Alaska continues.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from First National Bank Alaska, working shoulder to shoulder with Alaskan businesses for nearly a century. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender. And by ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company.
Being prepared, that's the subject. Winter survival on Talk of Alaska today. We're rounding out the last 10 minutes of the show. Our telephone number, 1-800-478-8255. A local call in Anchorage at 550-8422. Probably the best way to get through now is email, and I got a stack of them. And my two guests from the North American Outdoor Institute are busily taking notes on all the things that are coming in from Bush, Alaska. Just it's an absolute gold mine, an encyclopedia of information among you people, the listeners to this radio program. It's just a privilege to sit here and keep the information flowing. This is Bob in Thorne Bay. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, Bob.
Hello, how are you?
Pretty good.
I've been out here for over 40 years and poking around the wood. Most of the time I've been down here, and a couple tricks I've learned. Okay, down here, of course, we're pretty much wet any season of the year, regardless of temperature, so hypothermia is our big killer. One of the things I've learned is always dress for where you're going. If you're heading out in the woods, dress like you're going to get wet, because you're going to get wet regardless of the season. A couple other tricks: if you do get lost out here, especially in the woods, you're not going to be seen. You got to be heard. So one of the things I always do is pack a pistol with me every half hour if you have to, touch off around. Now, one of the little tricks down here is trying to get a fire going when you're all wet and it's raining out.
Yeah, southeast.
Alder is an all-around survival wood. You can take little branches off, feather them with your thumbnail, and you'll get them to burn. I always pack a couple bolty candles or a half a slab of paraffin wax with me so I can always slice something off. And my matches always dip in paraffin, so they're always wet. And like the one man, I mean dry, I should say. Again, as I say, down here is trying to be seen as much as anything, because you're pretty much a non-entity when you're out in the big sticks. So bright colors are handy. I always wear wool. I don't care what time of the year it is. I've always got some wool on because it'll keep you warm. And plastic bags make great rain gear without having to take all that noisy stuff with you. I don't know. That's pretty much my input.
Yeah, you know, just fantastic, Bob.
Here, you gotta stay warm no matter what you do, and you gotta be found. You gotta actively help to be found. You know, be seen or be heard.
Right. Yeah, anti-cotton. I like your wool.
Yeah, me too. The wool. Yeah, that's key.
Yeah, Bob. Thanks for that call from Thorne Bay. I'm kind of a candle guy myself. I that's part of my survival gear is a candle. It's really helped me a number of times. We have this from Dan, who says, "Hey, vice grips can be pretty good. Yeah. At least a Leatherman."
Toolkit.
And also throws in energy bars, power bars, are similar. I noticed your list here, Dean, has a package of Jell-O. What's up with that?
Just energy. Uh-huh. So you need something to burn, and it burns quickly in the system and goes right to work.
And it's a great to be seen. You know, you can put it on the snow and take red Jell-O with it. Makes a great SOS.
I would have never thought of that. I'm going to be sitting there staring at this Jell-O. That would never occur to me. Thank you for that.
Yeah, it makes a great sign. Hey, I just wanted to say too real quick that the comments about teaching our kids, really that was the real mission behind the North America Outdoor Institute.
That's how you started.
It is. We were trying to save the kids, and we recognize that we need to do a better job of starting to teach these kids when they're young so that they do grow up and they do. It's just part of the way they recreate.
Peter was saying, you know, well, we got some in schools. I wish we had more.
That's right.
We don't have that much in schools.
We don't. I grew up here in Alaska. I never learned this stuff in school. I learned it by the experience, you know, from my elders. And so I just thought it was important, and we do need to get this into the schools, and we do all need to work together to do a better job of getting this information out there. And I love them, everybody calling in and sharing their personal stories, because it's those personal stories that we can all learn from.
Absolutely. Let's go to Doug in Homer. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, Doug.
Yeah, good morning. Hey, guys, this is a great topic. Thank you very much, and Merry Christmas to y'all.
Yeah. This idea came from the show we have with Bill Strever, where he just happened to mention, well, if you go into the ice, what you want to do if you got nothing to pick at it, you can put both your elbows up on there and to freeze it right onto the ice and get yourself pulled out. That got people calling like crazy.
There you go. Yeah. Anyway, I just had, this is really a Pandora's box for me, the whole winter survival thing. But I just had one note to add, just in these days of everyone being so dependent on technology, you know, our satellite phones, GPS devices, radios, and cell phones and whatnot. And let me just color that a little bit. I'm definitely not dependent on technology, and I don't believe it's a substitute for any of the other things, you know, the buddy system that the fellow from Chisholm was talking about, or having contingency plans, or basic map and compass skills. Basically, what it boils down to is listening to your elders, because they did just fine before us. But anyway, the point I wanted to make is about those technological devices. Batteries must be kept warm. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, they won't work. I've seen people pull out their sat phone in a help situation and get all mad at it and throw it down on the beach because they say it doesn't work. Well, the batteries are just cold. You know, and I think that's real important for people just to keep in mind.
You're saying you can revive the batteries even though they're, what you'd want to do is don't drain them when they're cold?
Yeah, well, I'm saying that they don't work so well when they're cold. And,
keep them warm.
The indicator on your phone will indicate less battery than is actually there when it's cold.
I see.
You know, if you take your satellite phone and try to use it when it's 10 degrees outside, and I realize that's pretty warm, but we're down here in the banana belt, and it'll show a couple of bars. Well, you go take it in the wall tent, warm it up, and boom, you're back up to 3 or 4 bars of battery. And,
all right, Doug.
Just something for people to keep in mind there if they do go to use that.
I appreciate that. Ariana from Fairbanks chimes in, says, hey, I went out for a little short daily jog, just an hour long, and I took a wrong turn, and it was hours, and I learned you got to be prepared for that.
Oh, man.
Fairbanks.
I mean, just about everybody's got stories like that.
That's right. Yeah, you jump in your car to go to the store, and, yeah, you get stuck or broke down, and you're walking in high heels. That's no fun.
Well, we didn't get to all of our calls, but I want to thank you very much, all of you, for being with us. Peter Atchek, thank you so much. It's a real pleasure talking with you.
You too, Stephen, and thanks to everybody that called in, and to Deborah and Dean.
Yes.
Appreciate being with you on the show. I'll need to talk to you a little bit afterwards, maybe.
All right. Likewise,
like
Peter.
To
great
hope
to talk
I get to meet
to
you.
You.
Stay in the office there. I'll give them your phone number. All right. Deborah is Executive Director of North American Outdoor Institute. Thanks for coming in.
Awesome. You bet. Thank you.
So how often do you get to work, do your deal with kids? How often?
You know, we do about 60 programs a year nowadays. So we're in the schools. We'll be in
good.
The schools this week. And we have programs all over the state. And we're working with the Department of Public Safety this year to do free avalanche awareness education and snowmobile safety. So give us a call or look us up on the website at besnowsmart.org.
All right. Dean Cummings, I want to thank you for being with us.
Thank you. It's been very nice. And, yeah, just to touch on the education to the next generation.
Quickly,
5 seconds.
Okay. Thank you very much. And thanks to, we've got...
Talk of Alaska is made possible by this member station of the Alaska Public Radio Network by...
Fire Island Wind, offering a renewable energy alternative to natural gas for South Central Alaska. Information at fireislandwind.com.
Views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at aprn.org. CD copies are available by calling 550-8400.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.